Today is December 23rd, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, our very special Christmas episode number 109, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and every other possible combination of politically correct or incorrect, politically correct? Politically incorrect holiday greetings for you. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment or question anything, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. Merry Christmas. You know,
Merry Christmas. And as long as we're talking about Christmas, I think we should talk about giving away presents.
Let's talk about giving away presents. How about some Cirque du Mac tickets?
I think that sounds like an excellent gift. And what do we have? 10 sets of tickets that we're giving out by the end of the year?
Yep, 10 sets of 2 tickets each for Cirque du Mac 5.0. That's our Mac Observer and Backbeat Media produced party during Macworld. This year it's going to be at the Red Devil Lounge. As always, it'll feature the Macworld All-Star Band, which includes... me, to be honest, Dave Hamilton, our president, on drums, Bob Levitis, Chris Breen, Paul Kent, Chuck Latornis, and Dwayne Straub, all rocking away. Sometimes we get some special guests. Did you know that we had Bud Tribble play with us last year?
You know, I saw the whole event, and I didn't realize, or actually I don't remember. Maybe because we had an open bar, that's why I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bud Tribble sat in on a couple songs with us.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Bud Tribble was one of the original Mac team, Mac development guys, and been involved with Apple for a long time. And that was fantastic. Anyway, we do occasionally get some special guests that play with us, and we're giving away tickets. The only way you can get in the party is to have a ticket. You cannot get in any other way. Even if you have a ticket, it's first come, first serve.
And that place fills up.
It does fill up. It does fill up. It's a great little venue. And if you want to enter some tickets, what do they have to do, Jeff?
What they have to do is go to the Mac Observer website, and we have a link there. You can also go to our show notes. We'll have a link there, too. And you can sign up every single day. And then I'm assuming we have some sort of magic system that involves technology or fairies or elves, I don't know, to let everyone know who's won.
Yep, exactly. It's we do randomly select from all the people that have entered. If you're going to be at Macworld, you want to come to a great party, one of the best parties. It's really, it's a trade party. It's not so much it's not open to the general public, and it's, you know, a great time to spend a Wednesday night during Macworld and sort of rest and relax.
You know, the party every year that I can remember has been fantastic. The music is always great. Anyone that has a chance to go really should.
Yep, absolutely. So go enter. And speaking of show sponsors.
Yes, audiblepodcast.com is our sponsor this week.
Yep, that is absolutely fantastic. They're sponsoring the show. We really appreciate that. And Audible Podcast, they're one of the, actually, they are the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment.
They are. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and to make sure all of our listeners know that as well, they are giving away a free audiobook to all of our listeners.
A free audiobook. Audiobooks can often be more than the printed version because, you know, it's an expensive proposition to put these out at this point. So being able to get a free one is absolutely fantastic. And when you have an audiobook, you can listen whenever and wherever you want to, just like the podcast, our podcast that you're listening to right now.
Right. And they have a really wide range of books to select from, well over 35,000 titles. So it's not like you're going to be stuck listening to Emily Bronte and nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. And they pretty much have every single genre covered. So that's also really cool. And as we said, you can get a free download. All you have to do is sign up. We've got a link on the show notes. You've got to go to the link.
That's right. If you don't go get the link from our show notes, you don't get the free book.
Right. Well, to be honest, you can type in audiblepodcast.com/appleweekly. But if you don't want to remember that, just go to the show notes, click on that link. You're not going to find it any other way. You're not going to find it listed over at Audible Podcast. You know, you can't find the link if you don't know where the link is.
That's right. So thank you for being our sponsor, and everyone, go get your free book.
Mm-hmm. Go get your free book, and we appreciate having them as sponsors. Wait, we should actually say, too, that you can get a 14-day free trial of Audible Listener Gold and one free download. That's the download that we mentioned. You can listen to them on iPods, Trio, CDs, PCs, Macs, etc., and you can obviously listen to listen whenever and wherever you want to. And you know, we encourage you to check this out, folks, because it's a great offer, and we're pretty excited about having them as sponsors. The folks at Audible have been doing they've been doing podcasts effectively before there were iPods.
That's true.
And they were one of the first companies to come over and be on iTunes, when iTunes was still Mac-only and unproven.
You know, that says a lot, doesn't it?
It does say a lot. It does say a lot. So thanks to and from, or then, or whatever, you know what I'm saying. Thanks for the folks at Audible. And we should throw out one more thank you before we actually get on to the news, and that's to thank Mark Linthicum, one of our listeners.
Yes, he had some great ideas to help us improve the audio quality of the podcast. So thank you very much. That was fantastic to come forward and give us all the great tips.
Yep, he already showed us one of the things that we're not doing. We have actually a lot more, and he's actually wanting to talk to us, and we're thinking that maybe after the holidays or maybe after Macworld we'll actually have time to do that. But he's already helped us out a lot. This particular podcast should sound all that much better. Oh, and since I've been ranting and raving, I picked up a new FireWire interface, the Eterol FA66.
You know, I can hear a difference in your voice already.
Oh, yeah. So I'm back on my proper mic. I plugged this thing into my Mac, and it worked without drivers the way it should.
The way it should.
The way it should. Hello, M-Audio. I'm talking to you. I pulled this thing out of the box. I ignored the CD that came with it. I ignored the manual that came with it. I plugged it in. I plugged in I plugged it into my FireWire port. I plugged my microphone into it, and I started using it. Why? Because they make it like they should.
You know, isn't it great when technology just works?
It is, and it takes a lot. You know, Apple has put a lot of effort into making things just work on the Mac. It's no, you know, it's no coincidence that Macs just work. And the folks at Eterol apparently use that technology well to make their stuff just work too. And so here we go.
That's excellent.
That's where we are. And it's probably time to do the news, huh?
I think we're about there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. An Apple rumor website is shutting its doors. The Mac is stepping up to active duty with the Army. New York City pensioners are pushing forward with a lawsuit against the company, and the iPhone tops the Gen Y holiday wish list. Also, Apple is planning another New York store. A security update created Safari headaches, and Intuit proved that some updates cause more harm than good.
ThinkSecret announced early on Thursday that the site had settled a long-standing lawsuit with Apple Incorporated. The settlement announced contained two publicly revealed elements. The first is that the site will cease publishing. You heard us right. ThinkSecret will cease publishing. And the second is that the site did not reveal its sources for the story over which Apple was suing in the first place. Other terms of the settlement have not been revealed. Apple sued ThinkSecret for misappropriating trade secrets for a story posted on December 28, 2004, pre-announcing what was to be called the Mac Mini. While the suit dropped out of the limelight after a year or so of legal maneuverings and lots of very bad publicity for Apple, it was an ongoing case until this announcement. ThinkSecret was officially launched on May 3, 1999, by Nick DePlume, a.k.a. Nick Ciarelli, at the tender young age of 13. When he was sued, he was still a 19-year-old teenager attending Harvard, a fact that added to Apple's image of being a bully for pursuing the case in the first place. Until that time, few realized that one of the most highly regarded, quote-unquote, Mac rumor sites on the Internet was published by such a young person. As a site that often published information about unannounced Apple products, ThinkSecret was not highly regarded by the executives of Apple, even though those advanced stories often helped to build excitement about Apple's Macworld keynotes from Steve Jobs.
And the Army is on the prowl for ways to shore up its cyber defenses, so it's looking to Apple for some of its computer needs. The military is hoping that by adding Macs to its mix, hackers will be less likely to break into critical systems. Lieutenant Colonel C.J. Wallington, a division chief in the Army Office of Enterprise Information Systems, claimed that the Macs and X-Serves already online in the data center have been holding their own and are fending off attacks. He said, quote, "Those are some of the most attacked computers there are, but the attacks used against them are designed for Windows-based machines, so they shrug them off," unquote. So far, only about 20,000 of the Army's 700,000 computers are Macs, but that number is growing. About 1,000 new Macs are added during each biannual hardware buying phase.
PC World's biggest tech disappointments list for 2007 is out, and Microsoft's Windows Vista operating system ranked at the top. Microsoft wasn't alone on the list, however, because Apple's iPhone and macOS 10.5, that's Leopard, operating system made the cut as well. On Vista, PC World said, quote, "5 years in the making and this is the best Microsoft could do? No wonder so many users are clinging to XP like shipwrecked sailors to a life raft, while others who made the upgrade are switching back," unquote. Years overdue and missing promise key components, Windows Vista seems to be disappointing customers as much for what it does have as for what it doesn't. Many Vista users have been complaining about extensive driver incompatibilities, heavy hardware requirements, and constant security warnings.
PC World had a bone to pick with Apple, too. macOS 10.5 came in at number 8 on the list because of wireless networking issues, administrator account problems, and a file transfer bug. PC World said, quote, "Maybe we just got spoiled by the iPod and iPhone, but the glow came off Steve Jobs' halo after this feline Fleabag debuted." Within days of its release last October, Mac users reported dozens of problems with the new OS, some more serious than others, unquote. And while the iPhone was praised at the expense of Leopard at one point on the list, it earned its own slot at number 5. PC World bagged the iPhone for its touchscreen keyboard, lack of flash support, reliance on AT&T, and the surprise $200 price drop only weeks after the device launched. The list also gave the iPhone a ding for what it considered an intentional move on Apple's part to permanently disable units that had been hacked for use on other cell carrier networks.
Even though a federal judge said that the New York City Employee Retirement System's suit against Apple over improperly backdated stock option grants didn't hold water, the organization is moving forward with its case anyway. The group filed a new version of its suit this week, and a hearing is scheduled in January to see if the case can move forward. The pension organization originally claimed that it had been hurt by a drop in stock value after Apple revealed in 2006 several incidents of improperly backdated stock option grants. The company's stock did drop about 14% after the news surfaced, but has since recovered and climbed about 500% compared to its value in 2005. U.S. District Court Judge Jeremy Fogel ruled in November that the organization couldn't show it had been harmed since, well, Apple stock continued to climb after the backdating incidents were uncovered. He advised the group to consider refiling their claims as part of a derivative suit. Instead, the city's pension group's board of trustees is moving forward with its own suit. The case could, however, derail once again if Judge Fogel rules that this new suit doesn't have merit either.
And a survey of 1,175 13 to 25-year-old Generation Wires by Peanut Labs revealed that the iPhone is the most popular mobile device on their Christmas wish list this year. The survey revealed that the group was ready to spend more than the $300 on electronic devices, which jibes with the iPhone's $399 price tag. Murtaza Hussein, Peanut Lab CEO, noted that the Generation Y consumers are a bellwether for the newest trends in electronic gadgets. He said, quote, "Their choices this holiday season will not only affect their direct spending, but also directly influence the overall family holiday spending. These results should prove intriguing for companies like Apple, HP, Nintendo, or Amazon, which top Gen Y's list this year," unquote.
Apple CEO Steve Jobs and NTT Docomo President Masuo Nakamura have been in talks over a deal to bring the iPhone to Japan. So far, the iPhone is available in only a handful of countries, and moving into Japan would open the door to one of the most sophisticated cell phone markets in the world. Sources close to the negotiations state both sides are negotiating terms of the agreement, and that one point of contention seems to be how much Apple wants for its cut of subscriber revenue. That comes as no surprise, since revenue sharing has seemingly been a sticking point in the deals Apple has struck with carriers in every other country, including the U.S., where the company has negotiated or tried to negotiate a deal. So far, it's Apple 4, cell carriers 0. Docomo may be Apple's first choice as its partner in Japan, but it isn't the company's only option. Apparently, Apple is also talking with SoftBank, a sales service provider that is reportedly very interested in an iPhone deal.
Apple released a new security update for macOS 10, 10.4.11, and 10.5.1 this week. The seductively named Security Update 2007-009 addressed security problems with a wide range of macOS 10 apps and services, including Core Foundation, Cups Printing, the Flash Player and Shockwave plugins, Quick Look, Safari, and more. Unfortunately, the update also introduced a new bug in Safari 3 that can cause the application to crash when handling certain website frames. TMO's own web expert Stephen Swift explained it like this, quote, "The error happens when the user tries to submit a form to another target frame or window. Safari stops that and, in fact, crashes. The idea is to keep any malicious hacker from, for example, trying to load code into a hidden window," unquote. The security update does not appear to affect OmniWeb 5.6 or Firefox 2.0.0.11, so try using either of these browsers if you visit websites that Safari stopped working with after applying the security update.
Intuit came under fire from users early in the week for a problem with the QuickBooks for Mac updater that was, get this, deleting users' desktop directories. Oops. The company has fixed the problem and is now working with customers to recover the files they lost from their hard drives. Users of QuickBooks 2006 and 2007 for the Mac began reporting on Sunday that the application displayed a dialog stating that a software update was available. When the updater began to download, however, the user's desktop directory and all of the files on their desktops were deleted. While Intuit is working to help customers recover lost data, the incident is a good reminder of why it is important to regularly back up your files. No word yet from the hacker community on the various and sundry ideas that this idea has spawned.
And finally, in this week's news, New York City may be home to yet another Apple store soon. Apparently, the company is planning its fourth retail location for the city's Upper West Side. The proposed Apple store will be at the intersection of Broadway and 67th Street and will include a new building instead of remodeling the existing structure, a building that formerly housed a Victoria's Secret store. Apple has not yet announced what the new building will look like, or when to expect the doors to officially open, or if they're going to stick with the Victoria's Secret wardrobe and change how the Genius Bar employees dress. I'm betting you'd have a lot more problems with your Mac if they changed the wardrobe, huh?
Well, it depends on who the geniuses are that are wearing them, because that actually evokes a wide range of.
You're right. That could either draw customers in or keep them away.
I mean, you know, it's no lemon party, but.
No, it's not.
And that sound means it's time for the Merry Christmas Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on and how it relates to Christmas. Wait.
Merry Christmas. Think Secret's closing.
Think Secret is closing. Wait. That's not really a good Christmas present, is it?
No, it's actually not a good Christmas present in my opinion.
You know,
although it does have some good things in it, at least from the small amount of information we have.
Maybe. We actually dabbled in the rumor business for a very short period of time many years ago. For those who don't know, the Mac Observer officially launched its doors under the name of the Mac Observer at macobserver.com on December 28th, which is coming up in a couple days, 1998. So we've been publishing a long time, and in our first couple of years, we get information all the time on what's happening, on what's going to be coming, the new products and stuff. And we know there's many stories. We knew about this Mac Mini story. We knew like probably a week and a half before it went out on ThinkSecret. And we decided not to be in that business a long time ago.
You know, I think that's good. And I'm not saying that to say that rumor sites are bad. I'm saying it because Mac Observer has a format that we follow. Mm-hmm. And it's as a news site and not a rumor site. So avoiding rumors like that, to me, that makes sense.
Let me play devil's advocate to that. Every single major trade industry, I'll say it that way, has trade magazines that work on speculating about what's going to be, what the various companies are going to do. This is the automobile industry, for instance, has many publications that for decades have been dedicated to finding out what Ford, GM, Chrysler, whatever was going to be announcing before they announced it. This is not something that's endemic to Apple only.
Oh, and you're absolutely right.
And, to be honest, folks, this goes part and parcel. The idea of wanting to know what you're going to be doing is part and parcel of being a successful company.
But, if you don't know ahead of time what, especially in an industry like this, if you don't know what's coming down the road ahead of time, it's extremely difficult to make informed buying decisions.
Particularly for corporations. This is one of the reasons why Apple has had such a hard time getting its foot in the door in a lot of corporate markets, is because they don't want to tell anybody anything.
Right. Now, of course, on the other side of that, do you really want to base your corporate buying decisions on rumors?
No. Rumors are no solution for the corporate world.
No, not at all. I mean, the whole rumor thing, I think it's necessary and important, if for no other reason, because people love the rumors. And that's reason enough for rumor sites to exist. But to go along with that, then you have the part where they might be uncovering information that's really useful to people. And it also builds up a lot of hype and interest in this case for Apple.
Mm-hmm. It's a two-sided coin. On the one hand, Apple is obsessed with controlling everything about Apple. Their PR department's job is not to get people like us to talk about them, but to try to control what we say. And when I say people like us, I actually mean mainstream media, TV, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, LA Times, Reuters, and online-only publications like the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Their job is to try to control what we say. Every other PR department in the world, well, maybe not every, but almost every other PR department in the world, their job is to pray and to hope that the media will talk about them.
Right.
And so this is a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Apple likes the secrecy. Part of Apple's success in the marketplace has been controlling the message, controlling the timing of the message. Part of Apple's success has been knowing what they're doing when the competition doesn't know what they're doing. But on the other hand, the hype and excitement that's built up by sites like Apple Insider and ThinkSecret, which I think are probably the two biggest, the two rumor sites, it has been a part of Apple's success, especially in the last few years, because the mainstream media started paying attention to what sites like that were reporting.
That tells me is that rumor sites can be a huge and powerful tool for Apple. I mean, since they want to control what everyone is saying, you can use rumor sites to, and I'm doing air quotes, leak information out to these sites, and then they're publishing it, and the information that Apple wants people to get is going out in a very focused way.
Well, you know, that's the funny thing is that the moment that Apple were to sort of let go of that, the less people would be interested.
It's double-edged sword for Apple.
It's a very interesting situation. It's not a complex one. It's not just an issue of these evil rumor sites, you know, ripping off Apple's trade secrets and hurting Apple. And it's not just an issue of Apple being control freaks who you know, want to destroy the free press in America. Neither one of those descriptions is even close to accurate, because it's just huge and complex. And we're not in that business. We made the decision not to be in that business. And I, quite frankly, sort of lost my desire for you know, really, for the rumor, you know, for being a consumer of the rumor side of the business a long time ago. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Think Secret has been a bad thing. I don't know. It's kind of fascinating to me.
You know, you're right. It's extremely complex, and there's definitely a place in this industry, just like all the others, for rumor sites or rumor publications.
Well, it's a fact of life. It's not so much that there's room for it. It's not like, you know, the marketplace needs it. It's just a fact of life. I think that the last thing, the worst thing in the world would be for there to be no interest in Apple rumor sites. The worst thing in the world for Apple would be for people to lose interest in what they're doing.
Oh, sure. I mean, if you're not paying attention to the rumor sites as a consumer, and when I say this, I'm generalizing. I'm not implying that everyone needs to follow everything rumor sites mm-hmm. say. But by following the rumor sites, that's showing that people have a real interest in what Apple is working on mm-hmm. next.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And that interest, again, is part and parcel of Apple's success.
Yeah, and if people didn't have that interest, there would be no need for all of the theatrics and dare I say hoopla that goes along with Macworld mm-hmm. Expo and the Steve Jobs keynote. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much media attention on that, and it all goes back to the same thing. Everyone is showing up to see what's coming out, and for some people it's, hey, I want to see what's new. For other people it's, I want to find out if the rumors that I've been following are mm-hmm. real.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, Think Secret has been, I think, very responsible in the reporting. They as I understand it, I'm not part of the organization by any means, but as I understand it, they double source all their information. They're following proper journalistic procedures for doing their reporting, and because of that, you know, I'm sad to see them go, and at the same time, I'm left with one question: why would they agree to this?
And what's that?
Why would they agree to shut the door?
Oh, I forgot. We don't have a video podcast. I was shaking my head in an I don't know thing.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, of course, that Apple is paying Think Secret. I mean, that those parts of the settlement have not even, you know, have not seen the light of day, and I don't know that they ever will. But I would be shocked if Nick wasn't getting paid to go away.
You know, it makes sense.
Well, yep.
Just, you know, I mean, why would he just say, okay, whatever, see you later, and pack up and go
home?
Well,
the reason for that would be, of course, because he was going to lose.
Well,
but
sure.
But he wasn't going to lose. At least I don't think he was.
Yeah, and, you know, and of course, I haven't been able to sit in on any of the meetings with all these attorneys, so I can't say for sure, but my guess, especially because he didn't have to divulge his sources, is that everything was probably going his way.
Probably.
And even if it wasn't going to be perfect, it was more in his favor than Apple's.
Yeah, I would imagine that to be the case. So, you know, folks, let's stress here. We're just armchair pontificating here. I mean, we don't know. You know, it's possible that Nick, that maybe something came out in the course of discovery that, you know, is going to screw him or, you know, not screw him, but sink his case or whatever. We don't really know. We have no idea. I just, my gut reaction is that he was probably paid for Apple, and yeah, I guess more power to him. He's been a very successful young man. I mean, you know, I've known for a long time how young Nick was. But, you know, a lot of just very, very few people realized that it was a kid. I mean, a literal kid that was running this very successful rumor site that, again, was following all these proper journalistic procedures.
You know, good for him.
Good for him.
And now, I mentioned that there was some good that came out of this.
Yeah, what was that?
And the good, in my mind, is that he did not divulge his sources. Yes. And I think that, you know, it's a small victory, but it's an important victory because it helps set a precedent moving forward so that other people or other journalists and other organizations that may be in a situation down the road where a company says, we are demanding you divulge your sources, if it ends up in court, we now have a little something extra to fall back on and say, well, look, you know, we have this situation here where Nick didn't have to reveal his sources, and you know that well, builds a framework, a foundation.
But a settlement doesn't really make the same kind of precedent that a court decision.
You're absolutely right, but it's something that that I'm sure a savvy attorney would be more than happy to bring up in court.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you know, look for I am a protection of the press guy. When it comes to the rights of a corporation versus the freedom of a free press. Give me the free press every single time.
I agree with you completely.
You protect the corporation. There's a word for that. It's called fascism. And if you think I'm being like all freaky and stuff, it's actually literally fascism. But I am all for free press, and I have been terrified from the moment that Apple started subpoenaing PowerPage and Apple Insider and ThinkSecret for their sources on Asteroid. Which was a different case.
Oh yeah,
that was a lawsuit against John Dindos, unknown sources. Those websites weren't being sued; they were being subpoenaed. But from the moment that took place, I was really, really scared at the notion of anyone, corporation, private individual, government being able to get a source from a journalist saying that trade secrets are more important than a free press. And, That's a scary ass precedent. Pardon my language, but that's a scary precedent, and I'm glad that didn't happen. It would have been really upsetting to me if, you know, Apple, the company of thinking differently and rebels and stuff, had been a part of a weakening of the free press.
You know, I was watching that really closely too, and actually I think I've wrote several articles about it as it was progressing. But I was really, really worried.
I was too.
I mean, I was watching that really closely because whatever came out of that was going to have a major impact on all of us.
It would be a precedent that would be cited in the future by someone. And, you know, and yes, you know, Apple's ability to protect secrets are important. But if that precedent could ever have been turned into the government being able to get sources for something or, you know, a weakening of the whistleblower protections. You know, I mean, and don't get me wrong, this is not a whistleblower case, but, you know, any kind of precedent weakening the freedom of the press is scary stuff. And it didn't happen, and I am very happy about that.
As am I, because the last thing we need is to reach a point where we're now having to deal with government censorship.
Yep.
And, you know, and even though this was a case where Apple wanted to find out who told ThinkSecret about the Mac Mini. You know, you can follow the natural progression to where you have the erosion of rights to the point where, sure, eventually we do have government censorship of the media.
Or corporate censorship of the media.
Yeah, and, you know, both very bad things because... The last thing that the public needs is to have a media that they can't trust at all. And if you have corporations or the government telling the media what's okay to write, then you've lost that. The trust cannot be there anymore.
No, or at least it shouldn't be there anymore. And
right. Yeah,
speaking of
not.
Trust, what do you think of PC World and their list of disappointments?
You know, I can understand being disappointed with Vista because, well, pretty much everyone is. But then when I look at the Leopard and iPhone thing, and okay, yes, there definitely were some problems with Leopard. Okay, there still are problems with Leopard, and depending on what industry you're in, there might be considered a lot of problems with Leopard. But, I mean, come on, don't use the iPhone to
say that the bar has been set high.
Yeah, and then turn around and bag the iPhone.
That's kind of weird. Of course, it may have been two different people that actually put that together, and maybe for some bizarre reason the editors.
Well, don't they have editors?
Notice the lack of continuity.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that and I thought, oh, come on, people. You know, yes, there are legitimate gripes about Leopard. There are legitimate gripes about the iPhone. And, of course, there's legitimate gripes about Vista as well. But, I mean, get it all straight and keep a consistent story through the
whole
thing.
All right, let me put up John Keats' hat and be the devil's advocate.
Oh, please.
Why is it fair for us to excuse Apple's problems with Leopard while continuing to bag on Microsoft's issues with Vista?
You know, it's not fair.
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I mean, yes, it is.
I was playing devil's advocate, darn it. I mean, it's all right, let me try again. I'm going to choose my words like a big boy. Leopard had some minor problems, whereas Vista has been a major disappointment.
That's absolutely correct.
The issues with Leopard are minuscule compared to the initial problems with Vista, the problems that many people are having, and I actually have a point about that too, and the fact that Vista was once Longhorn, which was this miraculous redeployment of Windows, and it ended up being a lot less than that, and I think that that's a big part of why there are so many people from the Windows world that are bagging on Vista, but the things that are in Leopard, they're minor problems that are going to be fixed. And in many cases,
you're right. Now, when you look at Vista, okay, Microsoft set themselves up for failure. When you choose a name like Longhorn for the code name for the product, okay, you're setting yourself up for failure. They might as well call the next version of Windows, Windows 7 now, because they can't keep a consistent numbering scheme. I mean, they might as well use a code name like Seeping Boil or something. you're setting yourself up for failure.
We're here today to talk about Windows Seeping Boil. It's our new version, and we really think it's going to be exciting.
That's so wrong. I can't believe I said Seeping Boil.
I can't believe that I actually got to use my passable Bill Gates impression and Seeping Boil in the same instance.
You know, I'm glad I set that up for you. You're welcome.
Thank you very much. You're right, though. They a lot of Longhorn. But I think it's because they expected to be able to do what they thought they could do with Longhorn.
Oh, I'm sure they totally expected to be able to pull it off, and in the original time frame as well.
Oh, of course. I mean, the original feature set of Longhorn was actually pretty impressive. Yeah, sure. A lot of the things were already in Mac OS X, and then a lot of things that were announced in Leopard got introduced into Mac OS X before Longhorn ever. Actually, a lot of them were introduced with Tiger before Vista got off the ground. And then, of course, like I said, Microsoft was certainly borrowing things from Apple, but there were a lot of underlying changes in the way, like the file system and what you were going to be able to do with searches and all those sorts of things that were pretty fundamental changes that didn't make the final cut because they realized that they'd be working on it for another 5 years.
Yeah, they definitely would have been working on it that long.
And Leopard, on the other hand, has delivered most of what it promised to deliver. All the major features that were originally introduced with Leopard made it into the final release.
Yeah. And now, I'm going to be devil's advocate for a minute. And with all the things that are great in Leopard, it's amazing the problems that are there that are showstoppers for certain people. And in many cases, if you look at like the graphic design industry, where you have a lot of Mac users that are graphic designers. And there's some serious problems in Leopard that are going to keep people from switching from Tiger. There's still printing issues that have to be worked out. There's still some file copying issues that have to be worked out. Who's in charge of color sync?
that may actually be a good question, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, color sync. I feel like color sync is languishing right now.
Dr. Chucklehead, remember that guy who was suing over? He was one of the guys who was saying that his patents covered what color sync did.
Oh yes. Yeah, there you go. So, all right. So there's some issues that for a specific group of Mac users are kind of serious now.
Absolutely.
But, so how could Apple release a product that they had to know was going to be very problematic for this major portion of their user base?
Well, let's back on Apple then, because they may have just been at the point where they decided to release what they had, rather than waiting anymore, too, just like Microsoft did.
Yeah, and Apple doing that. See, I keep jumping back and forth
it's
our
show. It's that kind of issue, too. It really is that kind of issue.
It is. So if Apple had to take one on the chin with graphic designers so that they could get the product out in a timely fashion and not look like Microsoft and be years late with this product, okay, I totally get why you would do that. So now my guess, though, is that we're going to be looking at macOS 10.5.2 or 10.5.3 before you see graphic designers go, okay, now I can move.
Right, and it may actually even take longer than that simply because, the graphic design industry has always been one of the slowest to change within the Mac world.
Yes.
Apple has really high percentage of its users that move on to the newest version of the operating system, probably in part because of the much lower expense than compared to, say, Windows.
Oh, sure. And that's one place where Apple totally gets it. $129 for the operating system. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then doing the family pack for $199. Five licenses for $199.
Yeah, let's
and you don't even have a serial number. It's just
right,
a trust thing.
And let's not get on too much of a tangent there, but my point was that the graphics design industry oftentimes will keep a working environment, especially for big projects.
So they will
often be very slow to move in the first place. But if there is any trust issues with Leopard, it will probably take more than just the update that fixes the problems. It'll take longer than that for the for some aspects of the industry to go ahead and upgrade.
Okay, so then I would be better to rephrase what I said earlier and say it will probably be 10.5.2 or 10.5.3 before I'm actually telling graphic designers, okay, now it's okay for you to upgrade.
Yeah, and back to PC World's disappointments list.
Oh yeah, we were talking about that.
We were. How is a price drop a big disappointment? That doesn't make sense to me either.
And add to that the touch keyboard.
Yeah, well, that's a subjective thing. I guess if they don't like it, that's fine. I love it myself, and I mean, as our listeners probably know by now, the last thing I am is an Apple apologist. But I love the iPhone touchscreen, and not only that, I love the fact that the thing that people seem to sometimes miss about the iPhone is that having virtual controls means that you have only the control that you need, which means that you have more room to do what you need and want to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Again, it's part and parcel. You can't have an iPhone with this kind of screen and have a physical keyboard. You just can't do it. It's going to have a different
form factor.
It's going to be thicker. Look at all the crappy products other people have tried to put out, where they have tried to give folks their screen cake and eat it to keyboard. Whatever, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, what you're saying is these other companies are developing products that suck because they don't get how the components have to work together to make this type of an interface
right.
happen.
But you know, if PC World wants to list that in a disappointment, fine. I think they're wrong, but that's just as subjective as their opinion to begin with. So you know, whatever. But
but don't sit there and hold the iPhone up as this holy grail.
Yeah, the iPhone lifted the bar, but it's a major disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to bag on PC World. They do a fine job. You know, more power to them. It was them that heaped praise on the MacBook Pro for being the best for running.
Yeah, right. That's absolutely correct.
That didn't last very long. There was another machine that came out after a fairly short period of time. That they said was better,
yeah.
But whatever. The point is that it, when it was true, they said it. So more power to them. I'm not backing on them. I'm guessing that listing Apple products as major disappointments is good for readership.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Good for eyeballs. Good because, for subscriptions.
Yeah. Bagging on Apple. Apple's a company that so many people love to hate.
Rob Enderle.
And
Torque. Oh, sorry. Sorry, I've got a major cough.
Yeah, you know, Quark, that was a company that people loved to hate.
Oh, actually, I said Dork.
Oh, I thought you
no,
said
I was
Quark.
Still on Rob Enderle.
Okay.
All right, so lastly, let's, you know, we're kind of running late. Let's chat a little bit about Intuit. You know, this pretty much just about qualifies them for the Chucklehead Award, don't you think?
No, it completely qualifies them for a Chucklehead Award. I mean, I don't get how a company can have an update that deletes users' desktop directories, which of course means all the files that are on your desktop will go away. How can you possibly let that out the door? How does that happen?
I don't know. I'm looking at all the files I've got on my desktop and you know, because I'm not as neat and orderly as I'd like to be sometimes, but... Oh my God, I would be a tad tense. I think I have wedding pictures on my desktop.
You know, I tend to be pretty laid back most of the time. I mean, when was the last time you ever saw me get really angry?
I don't know that I've ever seen you really angry.
Okay, I would get really angry if I had a software update do something like that.
Are you kidding? I'd be angry. Sorry for the anti-climax.
Sure,
I just couldn't figure out how else I wanted to express it.
I would totally Hulk. That's what I would do.
There you go. Yeah, pretty silly, but you know, it seems like they're doing the right thing if they're actually trying to work with customers to recover data. I mean, you know, really, that's almost an impossible task for them to be in. I mean, how many users are we talking about? And so, you know, how are they assisting with that, Jeff?
What they're doing is they're working with ProSoft Engineering. To get people, data rescue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So they're helping companies work with the professional data rescue folks.
Right. So, yeah. So if someone goes and buys a copy of ProSoft Engineering's Data Rescue and they have lost their desktop directory because of this update, Intuit is going to reimburse them for the cost of data
rescue.
Okay.
Well, that's doing the right thing in a bad situation.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know that's really cool that they're doing that, and I'm totally glad that Intuit is stepping up to the plate and going, sorry, my bad, let me fix it. You know, that's great. On the other hand, how can you possibly let an update do this?
Yeah. That's just some bad Q&A.
That's just
bad Q&A.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. So, how about some listener comments?
Some listener comments. Yeah. Let's move on. Hey, let's play the riff first.
Oh yeah, let's do that. Well, last week Brian's Charlie in the Box rendition left a lasting impression on our listeners, and not necessarily in a bad way. And one of our AWR listeners commented, quote unquote, "That was precious, made me laugh out loud. Thanks." And because we're in the holiday spirit, I thought that maybe you could give us a little Charlie in the Box.
Well, it's well known that nobody likes a Charlie in the Box, or a doll that won't cry, or a train with square wheels.
You know what? I want you to record that for me and send it to me so I can use it as an alert sound on my computer.
You know, I bet you someone out there has the real
thing. When something
goes
wrong. No, I want yours. But yeah. So, all right. So for people that don't know what this is from, Charlie in the Box was the guard at the Island of Misfit Toys in Rankin and Bass's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas special, which is from the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah. Late 60s, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like right at the end of the decade or something. But the point is, it's a wonderful nostalgic reference. And Brian, I'm now going to look for any excuse that I can find to get you to do the Charlie in the Box impression for me.
Well, thank you. I'm very flattered. It's good that those years of
Charlie in the boxing
have finally paid off. I knew it. Take that, Mom.
That's right, Brian's mom. It finally paid off. He knew what he was doing, yeah. Okay? And his face didn't freeze that way.
Uh-huh. You know, we have some Charlie in the Box things that you went and found, didn't you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I did. Turns out there's a band called Charlie in the Box.
Uh-huh. And they're based out of Cleveland. It says yes. So, or at least I knew that because it on their homepage it says a Cleveland-based band.
Yeah, actually,
it's
it does.
CharlieInTheBox.com, and it looks like they're a cover band. So if you're in the Cleveland area and you're looking to hire a cover band, you can check out their very actually large list of songs and samples that they have to let you know how they sound.
Yeah, and I figured even though Charlie in the Box thought no one wanted a Charlie in the mm-hmm. Box. That someone might. Turns out a lot of people do. And so a company actually started making Charlie in the Box toys.
I see that. There's AnimeUSAExpress.com.
Right. And Time and Space Toys, which is timespacetoys.stores.yahoo.net. I love when they have the long thing like that. Yeah, they both are selling these Charlie in the Boxes that look real. I mean, they look like the Charlie in the Box from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah, it sure does. And we have links in the show notes, right?
Yes, we do. We do. And you know, it's so cool because the Charlie in the Box talks. It actually works. And you can set it up as a room sentry. And so it has a motion sensor. So if someone walks in the room, it will say
nobody
things
likes
like,
the Charlie
halt, who's
in the
there?
Box.
Yeah. I just love it. And they're like $30.
TimeSpaceToys.com seems to have like the whole Rankin and Bass Rudolph collection.
They do. You can get like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer action figures, and because you know they could totally kick G.I. Joe's ass.
Yeah, and many of them, like the Charlie in the Box, is 16 inches tall. It's pretty big, but it seems like some of these toys actually might be a little bit smaller. I'm looking at, and unfortunately, their Charlie in the Box is sold out too. But it looks like you can get Rudolph Yukon Cornelius Deluxe Talking Action Figure.
Oh, nice, nice.
Or the Humble Bumble Deluxe Action Figure. Looks like those are also about 16 inches tall. I kind of would love to. I'd love to have some of these.
Well, there you go. I'm glad I found these links for you.
All right.
You.
Well,
if for no one else, they're for Brian.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks to the listener who said that I made that it was both precious and made them laugh. I'm flattered and thanks. And I hope I can make some other folks laugh. Now, we have another listener comment that's not really a listener comment.
No, it's not. But, you know, this is our holiday extravaganza episode. So we're going to call it a listener comment.
We're faking it. Really, we just liked it so much It was Sir Harry Flashman that did this, right?
Yeah, right.
We like what he did so much that we wanted to make sure that we mentioned it because we think it deserves it. Sir Harry Flashman is a TMO reader. Has been part of our forum and comments for a long time. And tell him what he did.
Okay, so here's the deal. One of our other longtime readers and forum members, Gooey Duck, and if you don't know what a Gooey Duck is, you need to Google it, and it's G-E-O-D-U-C-K, Gooey Duck. Anyhow, so Gooey Duck totally loved the article we had about Max being used by the United States Army, and he wanted to know if there were any pictures of military Max, you know, Max and camo, whatever. Sir Harry Flashman stepped up to the plate and made a whole series of retro Army and military recruiting posters, like World War II style recruiting posters. And they're all Mac themed, and there's even one that talks about recruiting Mac observers. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, that's and he did a really good job of putting these together, and we just think it's fantastic. We have a link to that in the show notes. Of course, it was also originally posted in the comments, right?
Yes, that's where I found it. It was in the comments, but since not everyone is going to click all the way back through all those articles. Yeah, it'll be in the show notes, cool. So it'll be one click away.
That's cool, and that's our special holiday extravaganza, episode 109. That's 109 episodes of the Apple Weekly Report.
Amazing, amazing. Okay, if you have anything to comment on, add or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com, and remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness. Well, and that wraps it up. That's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth, what am I saying? The good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.
Yeah.
Because we're all the same good people.
We're all one big happy family.
Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. That's recorded for the Mac Observer, and that's all for this week.
As always, stay subscribed, and happy Festivus.
Yeah, happy Festivus, too. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com, and thanks again to our sponsor this week, audiblepodcast.com.
That's right. Remember to go get your free audiobook.
Mm-hmm. And sign up for the parties for Cirque du Mac 5. And everyone, we really hope you had a great holiday. Hopefully, you're even listening to this on your brand new iPod.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, I'm sure that a lot of our listeners will be listening on a new iPod or new iPhone or something.
That's great. I wonder if we sound better on a new iPod.
We have to sound better. I mean, how can we not? I mean, you think about how fabulous we already sound. You put that through a new iPod, it's going to be even more fabulous.
I'm sure it will be.
All right. Bye, folks.